This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Back in 2010s, chatbots were nothing more than a fancy toy you embed on your social media platforms. They were extremely limited and honestly, you only had a few preset questions or you would be constantly replied with, "Sorry, I do not understand messages." In the year 2020, chatbots have evolved and are now an essential part of making a business operations to run smoothly, from optimizing call centers to recruitment processes. And here with me today to explain a little bit more is...
Hi, I'm Vic from Hyperlab. I'm one of the co-founders and I'm currently the Chief Growth Officer for Hyperlab.
I'm Chris. I'm also one of the co-founders and I head up the marketing portion.
All right. And we last spoke actually in 2017 and we were talking to kind of like a real chatbot. It was a little bit of a struggle, if I remember it correctly, because of, you know, there were, I guess, you know, at that point of time, it was a new way of how we're going to, you know, make chatbots into a human being kind of thing where we'd have natural language. Let's look at how things have changed since 2017. What's changed in the industry?
I think if you look at it from, so if we were to throw back to 2017 and to kind of build it out to where we are now, I think the major change for me kind of being inside this industry and looking out is really the adoption and the kind of understanding that companies and enterprises have of what bots can do. Of course, in terms of just looking at it, if you were to zoom out and look at it in terms of more of a meta or kind of a bigger scale change, I feel that there's, you know, in terms of cloud operations, it's a lot cheaper, it's a lot more accessible, there are a lot better tools, a lot more improvements in terms of speech to text. So, I mean, kind of speaking to a bot and, you know, the bot being able to understand. You've got more natural voices from these kind of automated systems. So I think when we spoke to the bot, it was very robotic, right? Yeah. It was you knew it was a bot. And if you look at the voices now that the systems generate, it's obviously very much, you know, it's very natural and it's something that, you know, it would be hard to think. I mean, people sound like that or the bot sounds like people. So, I mean, it's kind of, so advancement in technology, definitely a key part to it. And also, I think just the overall understanding, as I mentioned earlier, from companies, but also the people that are building these bots. I think trying to replicate a human in terms of conversation is not a simple task, but as we do it more and more, we kind of understand how to do it better. So I think just the skills around bot creation has definitely improved. So I would say that those are key items.
Chris, what about like Hyperlab itself? How much have you guys changed since 3 years ago?
Well, I mean, since that time, we were acquired by a large customer experience company, Singapore-based. So the way we've changed is, you know, what we look to integrate more into how we do voice solutions for call center, how we can kind of automate more of that on a voice level, as well as chat on top of that. And I think the other part is, you know, how can we get a bit more narrow down the different industry verticals that we service? So again, like Vic said, I think there's been a lot of change in understanding on, you know, what they can do and what they can't do. And, you know, so what we're able to do is service more specific requests and be able to do it better. You know, you don't need to necessarily have it full on like coffee chat with a bot. You just want to get something done and you can do that a lot better these days.
But it's also the industry has evolved, I guess, then has understood what it could do. And do you get, you know, that education part of going to a client and explaining to them how it would benefit your business? Do you see a decrease in that because they now just understand what it means to have something like this?
Yeah, I think in terms of just explaining what a bot does, definitely for sure. But I think like, as Chris mentioned, I think the ability for the bot to do more workflows and be able to kind of provide more utility is definitely helping the case. I think when, you know, bots first started out, especially, you know, when Zuckerberg went up and said bots were the future, it was really about kind of very simple commands and being able to answer a few FAQs, right? As you mentioned, a few questions and that's about it. But, you know, the bots that we are building today really have very deep integrations within companies. For example, with a financial institution in Malaysia, the bot actually does the first level of interviews for candidates, able to screen and remove bias. So being able to do a lot of advanced kind of workflows and processes is definitely something that is available today. So kind of explaining and showing them successful case studies, I think, is the big difference from where we are today than where we were 3 years ago, because we've got 3 years of great cases, lots of ROI. We've won a ton of awards, actually. Hyperlab is, Chris is in marketing, but I would say probably the most awarded AI firm in the region. So I think in the last 12 months, we picked up 17 awards, a lot of it for results, which is in HR, in customer experience, in design, in technology platform. So those successful cases and showing how it works and how it brings utility, I think is what makes it a lot easier to educate clients today.
Mm. Did you foresee these industries picking up bots to be like, you know, a showcase for you guys?
I think there's always similar early adopters. I think in this field, you have banks and telcos, like businesses with large customers usually have large problems. So they're, and you know, their margins are good, so they have kind of money to spend on innovation. I think as you go down, then you get to the companies that, you know, slowly are a bit slower to pick up, but then also have large problems to solve too. So it was kind of always, in a way, always the plan. It's just a matter of sometimes how quickly that those pieces fall together.
What's been the leap in the last 3 years? Was it the ease of implementing the bots or the programming side of creating these bots, the natural language programming side of things? What's been the leap in the last 3 years?
I mean, it's kind of interesting. I'm going to say that the leap, for me, in my point of view, in terms of just looking at growth and looking at how we've done so far, is actually been our focus on design and the level of effort that we put in to kind of understand client problems and being able to advise them to kind of move forward. So for me, I would say that design is the biggest leap. Because if you think about it, at the end of the day, your user is still a person. And the way that we interact with something in the digital form needs to have a certain level of design baked into it. So that's why if you think about just hardware manufacturers or phone manufacturers, obviously the ones that have better UI and give you a better experience tend to be the more popular and more expensive choices. The same is true when you're dealing with something, whether it's software, whether it's a piece of automation. Even when it comes to building something that is voice-based, I think being able to design a voice experience with a good personality and building empathy into it, and all of those kind of softer elements of creating a program or product for a customer is actually, honestly, the leap for me.
Mm. So it's the human element.
Precisely, right? You humanize it to a certain extent. And that's a creative endeavor, right? Mm. I mean, if you think about all of us, we all have a certain wrapping, right? And that wrapping is what makes us special. So if we remove that and make it completely, I would say, synthetic, then you're just going to have a very vanilla experience and no one's going to want to come back and deal with that. So I think I would say design is definitely a big part of that.
What are people's perception of bots these days? Does it still have like a negative connotation in the sense that, bots, they're limited, or bots, you know, the extreme where bots will take over our jobs and stuff? What's the perception of bots these days?
I don't think there's as much doom and gloom as there was. And I think, you know, it depends on who you talk to. I think some people still don't, you know, interact with them on a daily basis. But from a business point of view, I think it's come to a point where it's kind of business as usual. It is, like you introed to the show, kind of part of a what you need to be looking at to be a modern business going into the future. I mean, just to pick up from another point, the level of maturity and education that go into some of the kind of pitches we pitch for and whatnot, it's quite clear that people have been reading up, have been experiencing, have been testing, and they're a lot more knowledgeable about technology, the use cases, than they were when we talked in 2017. But I think, yeah, there's a lot, and there's a lot more longer term thinking on, okay, now if I'm automating this, what do I do with my employees, or what does that do? It's a lot more results based and a lot more a bit longer term, longer horizon thinking.
And I'm speaking to Vic Sidhasadan and Chris Greenough from Hyperlab, and we will be right back in just a moment. BFM 89.9.
Balanced Frank Medium. BFM 89.9.
And you're back with me, Jeff Sandhu, speaking to Vic and Chris from Hyperlab, and we are talking about bots. So let's talk about some case studies that you have with the bots in the workforce. Perhaps, how has this changed the customer experience?
If we were to look at customer experience, okay, let me give you kind of two slightly different case studies. Okay, so we work with an insurance company today. And just to your point about, you know, people being worried about bots kind of taking their jobs, I think for this insurance company, the way that we're working with them is to actually create an assistant that actually helps the agents deal with customers. So the bot is the intermediary between the insurance company and the internal systems and the customer, right? So the agent is still having that one-to-one relationship with the end customer, but the assistant here helps the agent get quotes super quick, find out what the status of a claim is, being able to pull any information or policy documents straight away. Something that may have taken, let's say, 10 or 15 minutes using their kind of portal or, you know, their systems, it can be done within seconds, literally, right? So that kind of giving that superpower to the agent helps them become a better agent to kind of deal with customers. So that's definitely one. The second case I want to tell you is kind of slightly different in a way that we work with a very large telco that is across home and mobile. And we are offering basically the virtual assistant as their first level of digital support. So that means if they want to speak to someone, they can, but you go through the bot first in a way that the bot will try to answer your questions. And actually for that telco, we were given a KPI of being able to handle 30% of incoming volume through chat. So that they wanted the bot to at least handle 30% of the input. So once we launched it with the integrations into your account, so you can give them balance, you can do kind of account maintenance type of duties through the bot, we were able to pick up 70% of the incoming volume, essentially kind of reducing, I would say, peak volume for them, and being able to give time back to the agents to be able to handle the calls that they do get in a more, I would say, extensive manner than they were before. It was quite pressurizing to, you know, always have your screen pop with, you know, a bunch of different chats that you need to do. So I think that's the kind of two different cases. In both ways, I don't think we've taken any jobs. It's more of kind of building efficiency and I would say elevating the experience.
Mm. Yeah. What about the employees themselves using this? How does that change for their day-to-day workflow?
I think, yeah, companies are looking at, I mean, if the average enterprise has hundreds of different applications and sometimes you need to log into multiple of them, I mean, and large companies will employ help desks just to essentially regurgitate parts of their HR handbook or help them log in to certain things and whatnot. And it's kind of silly if you think about it that you do all this digital transformation, get all these systems up, but then, you know, the people forget their passwords and they have to log into five different things. And you have all the, you know, there's all these systems that you have to then systematically manage, and it becomes almost more hassle. So where I think bots come in and play an important role is they can take over the task of, you know, of that help desk assistant and that those people who, you know, is typically a lower skilled job, and replace that and give a really good experience, a 24/7 experience on top of that. We did this for one bank, and, you know, nobody was fired. They all moved, changed jobs, moved into talent acquisition, moved into different parts of the HR department. And instead of the help desk being, you know, an 8-hour open window, they could, you know, ask these questions all the time from home or anywhere. So
how's the implementation process like? Does it take a long time to actually be able to launch something within an organization? And is it a continuous process where it's continuously learning?
I think the best way to approach it is to allocate a good amount of time to kind of understand the problem and understand what the end user actually wants out of the solution. And that's where we do have advisory teams that go in there to consult the clients on and gather information and being able to use that to kind of propose something that would work. I would say the bulk of the time is between doing that kind of advisory as well as training the bot with the information that it needs. needs. But I would say that, you know, for most of the bots that we have launched, even the really large ones, we're able to launch them within a couple of months. So 2 months, 6 weeks to 10 weeks is the usual kind of timeline, depending on the size of it. A lot of clients do opt to phase out their bot approach. So you start off with, let's say, one product or one service area for customer experience, for example, and then you build that out. Or for internal employee experiences, the same thing. Maybe you choose a function like HR and you do that first. And like Chris mentioned, the bank that we started working with, we've been working with them for about 3 years now. It started off to help them out with branch operations, so information within the branch, to HR. We do interviews with them. You can even ask the bot to basically generate employment letters if you need to apply for a loan. So it's a very extensive bot that only could happen across a couple of years. But that didn't mean that it took 2 years to kind of launch a bot, right? So we had one within a couple of months and then we kept adding on. So I think the ongoing efforts is definitely required because you're going to stumble upon new things to add to it as you start to see users interact with it, and that's great. But also, in terms of just looking at what else can be automated and, you know, how else can we save time and effort and money for the client.
Mm. So, and with that though, it's not always being used as the middleman between the business and the consumers. So sometimes it could be used for business operations itself to make it more efficient.
Yeah.
It's an internal thing.
Yeah,
So what can be relied on bots and what, you know, you would say you shouldn't rely on bots for certain, sectors within the business?
I would say that, you know, when it comes to things like healthcare and those kind of things where there is really a life and death situation, I would definitely, if I were using a bot, I would definitely want a doctor to have a look at it, for example. But in terms of general codified knowledge within a company like a handbook or your internal systems, it's the source of truth is not the bot. It's the end systems that are actually the source of truth. So the bot is just the kind of the conduit or the orchestrator that's pulling the information and giving it to you. So it's 100% reliable in that aspect of it. Mm. But when it comes to creative judgment, finding out if you have a cancer, for example, although obviously it has high accuracy as been proven so far in some of these use cases, I would like a human to give me the kind of, to kind of look at it and tell me whether that's true or not. Mm. I think in those kind of circumstances, I think I would want someone to kind of help me out.
Because it relies on the existing database that an organization would have, right? So what would you say going to an organization who may not have, you know, that data sets that's already available where they could, you know, use a bot to mine? Do you then work with them in order to create that pool, that data lake itself? Or
because we're verticalized, we have a lot of those pre-built intents and we have pre-built kind of sets already. It's less on the data that goes in and more on the responses that come out, and working with to make sure that, you know, we have the right set of questions that go in. And for the rest, a lot of the more dynamic it is, in the sense that the more systems we integrate with, then even better, because then we're just retrieving parts of that information rather than necessarily needing to crunch something. So it's not so much of kind of needing to be, you don't need to be too smart about it sometimes. Sometimes, you know, you got to keep it simple. And that gets the best bot.
Mm. Do these bots remember? Do they have like a memory in a sense? If it's a call center operation and, you know, if I were to call and complain, generally it's about complaining about an issue, a follow-up within 2 or 3 days, would these bots, have some sort of memory that it's a recurrent caller and, you know, there's a frustration? Because we tend to have, you know, high expectations of these bots to remember everything now that we've given them almost all of our information.
I think we have high expectations of the agent as well. I think that's one of the things that definitely, I mean, like one of the algos that we have is a welcome back scenario. So you would potentially, you know, you call the bot and the bot will say, "Hi, Jeff, thanks for calling back. If you're calling about this issue, just to tell you, it's been resolved," or something like that, right? So you definitely have that welcome back capability. Actually, it's interesting that you mentioned that because I just got back from the US. So we just picked up a very large retailer in the US that we're actually working with our sister company in the US to deliver an omni-channel solution. So that includes bots plus human agents. And we're powering the automation for the IVR, which is the, you know, inbound call. You call a number and the bot will answer the call. Voice bots that connect to that, as well as chat bots. And one of the things that we are building is that welcome back scenario, because you can place an order and most people call to kind of find out where that order is at the moment. So, or if they... let's say you call in and you order a birthday cake, for example, you want to kind of know whether it's being handled at that point. So the welcome back algo is pretty important to keep the call short, because if people are calling back within a certain amount of time, it's quite likely that they're calling about a certain topic that they called you just before. Mm. So yeah, definitely those kind of things, again, is about making it as human as possible. Like if you were calling a friend about something, it'll be like, okay, yeah, bro, I'm going to like get back to you on this, right? So the same way, I think we want to be able to handle that with a bot. Mm.
The other end of I guess, the beauty of having these kind of technologies is also people using it for wrong reasons. So, you know, robocalls or spam of robocalls have been on the rise. And we've seen this not just in the US, but even here in Malaysia. I think over the Chinese New Year weekend, I had like 3 or 4 robocalls that I had to automatically block them. What's your take with the rise of these kind of spam robocalls? Do you see it's hampering your pathway to being more innovative and you know, exploring with new kind of organizations because it has this, robocalls?
I don't think it's hampering. I think it will get worse before it gets better. It's similar. Those same robocalls, I think, are similar to the rise in deepfakes, right? And you know, less and less we're able to trust, you know, what we have on the media. So that's good for, I think, companies like BFM, where they are a trusted kind of source of information, and maybe have, as I think companies need to really establish trust more with their customers in order to kind of ward off or use that as like a protective shell against these things. And it's only going to get worse, because you look at Alexa just launched, essentially it's partnership with Samuel Jackson, and you'll be able to talk to Samuel Jackson in your home. And it's not because they've pre-recorded every part of his voice. It's because they've essentially copied his likeness and are now able to kind of machine-based
synthesize
his voice. Mm. So as these calls and as these experiences and as these deepfakes get realer and realer, it's going to get harder and harder to discern what's real or not. But I think on the plus side is, you know, companies who have a lot of trust, build a lot of trust with their customers, and, you know, people and media who are able to suss out the truth are going to become more and more higher value over time.
So let's talk about ethics. Do bots really need to sound like humans? Should I know if I'm a caller, if I'm a human and I'm speaking to a bot or I'm speaking to a human, should I not know that distinction between, you know, I'm actually speaking to a bot, or should these bots just have the freeway of being human-like?
Okay, so I think there's two parts to that answer. So the first one is you need it to be natural, so you can converse as naturally as possible, meaning using the words that you would normally use to kind of explain your problem. So I think in order to achieve that, you would have to build the bots to be like that. But I think there has to be a way to validate whether you're speaking to an authentic bot. So what you will start to see, I guess, just on your point on robocalls and things like that, is some kind of digital signature that can be verified that you are speaking to the actual bot of the actual company. So almost like your SSL cert when you go to a page to buy, you want to make sure that it is the retailer that you're buying from, and it's not a phishing site. So the SSL cert kind of validates that. So the same way, you will need to be able to do that with a bot. There's no open standard to do that yet, but those are the kind of areas that you will start to see a lot more work and effort on. So you would be able to ask the bot for its serial number or validation key, key it somewhere, and then be able to say that, okay, this is a valid bot. So, I mean, those kind of things, I don't know how that experience is going to be, but it would be something like that.
Because we've seen examples from like Google, for example, with Google's Duplex being able to make an assistant call to a hair salon, and that's creepy because it just felt like it was a real human being.
I mean, we've done something not to the hair salon, but we've done a call for an insurance company to get feedback on their experience with their call center. So we've done that using an outbound call. It's I mean, it's not like a robocall that forces you to listen to it. I mean, you can just say that I'm in a meeting and then shut the call and it would be able to reschedule and things like that. But you will start to see more of it, I think. Mm. As Chris says, you're going to start to see a lot more of it before it starts to get a bit more regulated. But again, like deepfakes, right? I don't know how you're going to... Eventually, it's going to be so real that you're not going to know.
It's interesting because I think from a user experience level, it's a bit of a conundrum on one. I think ethically it's the right thing to do to say, hey, I'm a bot. And it also kind of preempts that there will be some limitations, albeit there's probably limitations even if it's a human on the other line. But what we've also found is that, you know, because bots are still new, people like to test bots. They like to break them, so to speak. They'll ask questions you'd never ask a human, and then you kind of lift a bot to an unreasonable standard. But if it is natural and you don't preface, people are more likely to talk like a normal person and not ask ridiculous questions. Mm. So on the other hand, by not saying it or by kind of maybe going with the flow, you get a more natural conversation anyway. So it is an interesting conundrum, but I think ethically it is the right thing to do.
Where do you see bots heading into the future? I just got back from CES and, you know, there were things like Neon's artificial humans where, again, you know, it's a human-like bot. Do you foresee a future where bots would just replace our smartphones, where, you know, an individual would have its own personal bot itself? Or is that too far ahead and right now we should really look at business cases?
I think within the next 10 years, you'll see them not just replacing our smartphones, but replacing our celebrities. I think that's where it's going, is that the future life shelf of a brand will be completely dependent on its ability to essentially humanize itself. That brands will become the celebrities. So if you look at the Samuel Jackson case with Alexa being the first step, and then you kind of pair that with what's been happening, like Will Smith's
in the movies, right?
Yeah. And The Irishman. You're seeing, I see at least a bit of a trend that new celebrities are going to be harder to come by as we even bring back old celebrities back from the dead. James Dean's going to be starring in a movie this year, right? And so as we rely more and more on older celebrities and as those their licensing of their likeness, it's like if you've ever seen The Congress, it talks about this, but as their likeness becomes more expensive, I think brands will then say, you know what, the technology exists for me to make my own celebrity and make my own bot. Mm-hmm. And I would say in the next 10 years, the top 10% of Instagram influencers will probably be synthetic. They'll be like, there's a pop star in Japan.
There is one already. Hatsune,
she's going to be at Coachella this year. Mm. So, so I think that's just the beginning. Like she was big in Asia, but now she's in the US. Now she's going to be in at Coachella. So I think that's going to give people a taste and a flavor of what's possible. And over the next 10 years, I think you're going to see that kind of only continue to grow.
Vic, Chris, thank you guys so much.
Yeah, thanks. Always a pleasure. Thank you.
And that was Chris Greenoff and Vic Sidharthan from Hyperlab, and we were talking about bots in the workforce. If you missed any parts of this conversation, you can download the podcast now. Available on the BFM website, or better yet, get the BFM app. We're also available on Spotify. My name is Jeff Sandhu, and this has been Tech Talk on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.